Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
A new pope, a dead picture personality, and a man not as old as he looked. It's February 1922.
100 years from today.
News update just 8 months ago, June 3rd, 1921, Pope Benedict XV created three new cardinals and joked with them, "Today I gave you the red hat, but soon it will be the white for one of you." Sooner than he thought, one of that trio is now the new pontiff, Achille Ratti, the Archbishop of Milan. The papal conclave has voted on the 14th ballot to elect him Benedict's successor. Cardinal Ratti will take the name Pius XI. His first act on assuming the papacy was to restore the traditional public blessing from the balcony, Urbi et Orbi, to the city and to the world, which popes have eschewed for half a century since the loss of Rome to the Kingdom of Italy in 1870. The Washington Naval Conference has ended with the signing of a naval treaty, the Nine-Power Treaty on China, and half a dozen other disarmament treaties between the great powers. King George V, in his speech from the throne to the British Parliament, has welcomed the agreements. His Majesty's government has announced that as part of the terms, Great Britain will be returning some 300 square miles of Chinese territory, including the city of Port Edward, to the government of China in 1930. The Soviet newspaper Pravda has published the results of what is known as an opinion poll, a survey of its readers. They are opposed to the decision by Vladimir Lenin to attend an upcoming economic conference in Genoa because they fear he is putting himself at risk of assassination. Lieutenant Colonel Newcomb and Lieutenant Colonel Pollet, the co-chairs of the Anglo-French Border Commission, have issued their final report on the boundaries between the British mandates of Palestine and Mesopotamia, or Iraq, and the French mandates of Syria and the Lebanon. There's been a bit of tweaking. The entire Sea of Galilee will now be in Palestine, while Syria will gain Cuneta to avoid dividing the lands of the Emir Mahmoud El-Fall. In the Indian town of Charichara, a mob has killed 22 policemen by trapping them in the police station and then setting it alight. The murderous attack came after the police had fired on a crowd of protesters, killing three. How is peace in the soon-to-be Dominion of the Irish Free State holding? In Killarney, an officer of the Royal Irish Constabulary was killed in a clash between the RIC and Irish Republican Army members who do not accept the Anglo-Irish Agreement and Mr. Collins' provisional government. Violence is spreading across the island. The Federation of Central America does not look long for this world. It was only formally established on January 19th as a union of four nations. A little more than a fortnight later, it is down to just two nations. El Salvador and Honduras have quit, leaving only Guatemala and Costa Rica.
My word, you do look queer. Your cheeks are all sunk and your colour's all gone. Your neck's getting scraggy. Still, you're getting on. How old are you now?
The death of aspiring actress Virginia Rapp at Fatty Arbuckle's party in San Francisco last year has convulsed the nation and filled American newspapers with accounts of rampant orgies, sexual perversions, and murder cover-ups in the picture business. Nevertheless, at the second homicide trial of Mr. Arbuckle, his lawyers felt so confident that they had discredited much evidence from the first trial that he was not called on to testify. That may have been a mistake. The jury deadlocked 10-2 in favour of conviction. So, a second mistrial, and the only question now is, will there be a third trial? Readers of the lurid lives of photoplay personalities have moved on to the strange case of the late director and actor William Desmond Taylor, who was found dead in the living room of his home in the affluent Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles. News spread, a crowd gathered and entered the bungalow, and from their midst, a man purporting to be a doctor stepped forward, examined the body, and declared that the 49-year-old Mr. Taylor had died of a stomach hemorrhage. The doctor has since disappeared, and it was only later, when Mr. Taylor's body was being removed, that anybody noticed the bullet hole in his back. Police have no shortage of suspects, including both his present and former valet. DeWitt Wallace was wounded in the late World War and spent 4 months in a French hospital reading magazines every day. That gave him an idea, and when he returned to Minnesota, he and his soon-to-be wife, Lila Bell, conceived the idea of a publication that would present 31 articles, one for each day of the month, condensed from their original longer versions in other publications. The first issue of that magazine is now out. It is called Reader's Digest, and Mr. and Mrs. Wallace are confident that they can make up to $5,000 a year from their new publication. Good luck with condensing and digesting the new novel from the Irish writer James Joyce. It is called Ulysses and has just appeared not in London but in Paris at the Shakespeare and Company bookstore owned by Sylvia Beach. Miss Beach met Mr. Joyce at a dinner party and he explained he was having difficulty finding any English publisher willing to publish the book. It is said to be difficult and modern. Miss Beach, however, arranged for Darrentier, a publisher in Dijon, to print 1,000 numbered copies, and they are now in the front window of her bookshop. The Ford Motor Company has bought the ailing Lincoln Motor Company for $8 million in what is being called the most dramatic receiver's sale in the history of Detroit. So Henry Ford, the creator of mass-produced affordable automobiles, will now have his own luxury car division. Associates of Mr. Ford say the purchase was made at the insistence of Mrs. Ford, who is friends with Mrs. Leland, wife of the president of the bankrupt Lincoln Company.
There's a track winding back to an old fashioned shack along the road to Gundagai, where the blue gums are growing and the marmitis flowing beneath that sunny sky, where my daddy and my
taking the road to Gundagai, New South Wales, may be easier than flying there. Ray Pearer made the first single-engined flight from England to Australia, for which he was awarded the Air Force Cross. It was also the first freight flight from England to Australia because he carried a bottle of whiskey for Australian Prime Minister Billy Hughes. He was confident he could also pull off the first flight around the perimeter of his country, but it has ended in failure. The Farman FE2 aeroplane crashed on takeoff from Boulder in Western Australia, and Mr. Parer and his cousin and co-pilot Mark Parer are now in hospital. Are you familiar with the Cheka? In just 4 years as Soviet Russia's secret police, they have slaughtered untold numbers of the Bolsheviks' enemies. It is not good news when the Chekists, in their distinctive garb of long black leather coats accessorized with Greek-style worry beads, show up at your door. As they boasted during the so-called Red Terror, quote, "Without mercy, without sparing, we will kill our enemies in scores of hundreds. Let them be thousands. Let them drown themselves in their own blood. Let there be floods of blood of the bourgeoisie, more blood, as much as possible." And so it was. Now, however, the Bolshevik government has decided that the Cheka will be dissolved and replaced by the GRU, the State Political Directorate, under, one notes, the same director, Felix Dzerzhinsky. As one Russian Cheka goes, another Cheka is taking off. Morris Markin is a 28-year-old Jewish immigrant to America from Smolensk with big plans. He has bought Commonwealth Motors, another failed automobile company like Lincoln, and the Handley Knight chassis plant, and plans to move all their operations to the Dort body plant in Kalamazoo, Michigan, where a renamed Cheka cab manufacturing company will make so-called Cheka cabs for taxi services in cities all across America. I'll be down to get you in a Cheka taxi, honey. Marie Curie, the first person ever to win two Nobel Prizes, is now also the first woman to be elevated to any of France's academies of science. The pioneer of research into radioactivity has been elected to the Académie nationale de médecine. The Dowager Countess of Strathmore and Kinghorn lived to see the betrothal of her granddaughter, Lady Elizabeth Bowes-Lyon, to the King's second son, His Royal Highness the Duke of York. She did not live to see the wedding. The Countess is dead at the age of 89. Field Marshal Prince Yamagata Aritomo was a great military commander, two-time Prime Minister of Japan, and the second most important figure in the country after the Emperor until just a few months ago, when he chose to object to the engagement of Crown Prince Hirohito to Princess Nagako because of the colour blindness prevalent in her family. Yamagata Aritomo is dead at 83. Christian de Wet was a Boer general, rebel leader, and briefly president of the Orange Free State. If you served in the British Army in the end stage of the Boer War, you will surely remember the Afrikaner's mocking parody of Sir Walter Scott's Bonnie Dundee. De Wet, he is mounted, he rides up the street, the English skedaddle and A1 retreat, the commander swearing they've got through the net that's been spread with such care for Christian de Wet. Then away to the hills, to the felt, to the rocks, ere we own a usurper, we'll crouch with the fox, and tremble, false jingoes, amidst all your glee, ye have not seen the last of my Mausers and me. Ah, but we have seen the last of Christian de Wet and his Mausers. He is dead on his farm at the age of 68, as General Smuts, Prime Minister of the Union of South Africa, put it in a cable to his widow, "A prince and a great man has fallen today." John Butler Yeats was not only the father of the poet and dramatist William Butler Yeats, but a widely admired painter in his own right. He had no trouble getting commissions from patrons in England, Ireland, America, but he was a poor businessman and thus never financially secure. In 1907, he sailed for New York and never saw Ireland again, spending his last years in a boarding house on West 29th Street. Mr. Yeats is dead at 82. Just a month ago in the New Year Honours, His Majesty the King was pleased to confer a baronetcy upon Alfred Bird, Member of Parliament for Wolverhampton West and proprietor of Bird's Custard Powder, the famous egg-free custard powder that bears his name. Sir Alfred did not enjoy his baronetcy long. He was struck by a motor car in Piccadilly and is dead at 72.
As we used to long ago, the green grove is gone from the hill, Maggie, where first the daisies sprung. The creaking old mill is still, Maggie, since you.
Ah, when you and I were young, Maggie. But when exactly was that? Chief John Smith was a Chippewa Indian who lived at Cass Lake, Minnesota, and had eight wives but sired no children from that octet, instead adopting just one son. He was known to local whites as the Old Indian, very old. He claimed to have been born in 1784. He has now died, allegedly at the age of 137. Chief Smith was certainly extremely wrinkled, but he doesn't seem to remember anything before the spectacular Leonid meteor showers, the night the stars fell, of November 13th, 1833, when he would have been 49. It is odd not to remember anything before you're nearly 50. Based on that recollection, the Bureau of Indian Affairs asserts that the 137-year-old Indian was, in fact, a mere late nonagenarian. Your world news update. In Rome, Cardinal Achille Ratti has been crowned pontiff, with Cardinal Gaetano Bisletti placing the papal tiara upon the man who will henceforth be known as Pope Pius XI. The Battle of Volochayevka is over. The Red Army of the Far Eastern Republic, led by Soviet General Vasily Blucher, has decisively defeated the White Army, led by anti-Bolshevist Major General Viktorin Molchanov, backed by the Japanese Empire, which had high hopes of gaining a territorial foothold in the Russian East. It is increasingly unlikely that in the former lands of the Russian Tsar there will be any alternative to Bolshevism. On the other hand, the value of the Soviet Union's currency, the ruble, is dropping like a stone on private currency exchanges. The official exchange rate is 280,000 rubles per US dollar, but it's fallen to between 500 and 600,000 rubles per dollar. In those far-off days of 1914, the exchange rate of the old imperial ruble had been 1.94 per US dollar. In the Greco-Turkish War, Greek soldiers retreating from Smyrna reached the village of Karatepe and chose to massacre 60 Turks there. The victims are reported to have sought refuge in the village mosque, which the Greek soldiers then set alight. Any Turks who managed to escape were immediately shot. Heikki Ritavuori was Finland's Minister of the Interior and the man who was a decisive force in the country's adoption of a republican constitution. That made him unpopular with many royalists, including a mentally unstable nobleman, Ernst Tandefelt. Mr. Tandefelt has shot Mr. Ritavuori dead at his front door in Helsinki. The minister was 41. It is the first political assassination ever in Finland, although Mr. Tandefelt is the second cousin twice removed of the murderer Otto Johan Tandefelt, who raised the lynch mob that killed Count Axel von Fersen, Marshal of the Royal Swedish Army, aide-de-camp to Rochambeau in the American Revolutionary War, and close friend of Queen Marie Antoinette. Count von Fersen died when Mr. Tandefelt jumped on his chest and crushed his ribcage. That was in Stockholm in 1810. Now, a century later, another Tandefelt has killed another public official in another capital city. Malacca, an agitator for the independence of the Dutch East Indies, has been arrested by colonial authorities in Bandung and is scheduled to be exiled on the island of Timor. However, Mr. Malacca says he would prefer to be exiled to the Netherlands, where it is rumoured he plans to stand for Parliament as a communist. Representatives of the United States and Japan have signed a treaty delineating American rights on the South Pacific island group of Yap and other former German islands mandated to Japan after the late World War. The agreement, signed in Washington by U.S. Secretary of State Hughes and Japanese Ambassador Baron Shidehara, will permit Washington equal access to the cable and radio stations on the islands. In India, the Mahatma Gandhi has suspended the activities of his non-cooperation movement until further notice and has embarked on a 5-day fast as penance for his non-cooperation supporters murdering 3 civilians and 22 policemen at Charichora. Can the fragile peace in Ireland hold, notwithstanding Michael Collins' new ministry in Dublin? Dissident members of the Irish Republican Army opposed to the agreement with London are returning to violence when they kidnapped 42 prominent loyalists, including police from the Ulster Special Constabulary. Mr. Collins was able to persuade the IRA to release some of them, 26 in number. In Clady, County Tyrone, that's Northern Ireland, Irish Republican Army men fired upon an Ulster Special Constabulary patrol. One constable is dead. Gunfights are resuming in even the most picturesque Irish villages. In Clones, County Monaghan, that's Southern Ireland, the soon-to-be Irish Free State, an IRA man with a machine gun fired on a police patrol preparing to take them to Enniskillen. One IRA volunteer is dead, so are 4 Ulster Special Constabulary. The surviving 9 constables are now being held hostage. Eamon de Valera, the former president of the so-called Irish Republic, stepped down when the Dáil Éireann chose to support the agreement setting up the Irish Free State. Mr. de Valera had called for the legislature of his republic to reject the peace deal with London. He is now making his total opposition to the incipient Irish Dominion more active. At a rally in O'Connell Street, thousands of supporters blocked traffic and cheered him as he demanded the Free State be rejected in favour of an Irish Republic. In the United States, Joe Cannon, former Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, has announced he will be going home to Danville, Illinois, and will not be a candidate for that state's 18th congressional district in the midterm elections later this year. The 85-year-old Republican's retirement brings to an end almost half a century in Washington. Mr. Cannon first won the seat in 1873 and has spent all but 4 years in the House since. He is regarded as the most powerful speaker in American congressional history and a man who clashed multiple times with his fellow Republican, President Theodore Roosevelt. Mr. Roosevelt, he said, has no more use for the Constitution than a tomcat has for a marriage license. President Harding has appeared in person at the United States Senate holding the 7 treaties signed at the Washington Disarmament Conference and urging the Senate to take prompt action on ratifying them. In a speech on the Senate floor, Mr. Harding said, "If we cannot join in making effective these covenants for peace and stamp this conference with America's approval, we shall discredit the influence of the Republic, render future efforts futile and unlikely, and right discouragement, where today the world is ready to acclaim new hope." President Harding has also signed into law the Allied Debt Refunding Bill, which provides for a World War Foreign Debts Refunding Commission, consisting of 3 cabinet secretaries, 1 senator, and 1 member of the House of Representatives. They will decide the repayment terms of U.S. loans made to Great Britain, France, Italy, and Belgium.
Desire. You won't have to send her word by wire. You never love her by radio. Even when you're all alone, think of all the fun that they can have both night and day, listening in to what the lovey-doveys have to say. I'll bet the things they hear would make a bachelor's hair turn gray when you love her by the radio phone.
Love her by radio. You will find it's radio.
President Harding can now love Mrs. Harding by radio. The first radio receiver has been installed in the White House.
Like to sit and spoon, why send your message through the air, she'll get it very soon. But first of all, make up your mind, your hearts are both in tune when you love her by the radio phone.
Speaking of radio, do you know what a chain is? It's what the American Telephone and Telegraph Company call their plans for a group of radio broadcasting stations that would share programming and distribute it nationwide via special telephone cables. The first link in the chain will go on the air from New York City next month.
Send her word by wire. You never buy her love. Her by-
Great Britain now has its first private radio station, 2MT or 2EMMA TOC, broadcasting on a frequency of 428 kilohertz from a hut next to the Marconi Laboratory in the village of Rittle in Essex. It offers a slate of entertainment, programming from 8pm to 8:30 every Tuesday evening, presented by Captain P.P. Eckersley, a former Marconi engineer turned writer and actor-manager. He recites poetry and sings songs and signs on the air with a cheery, "This is 2EMMA TOC, Rittle testing, Rittle testing." Smiling through. Have you seen Norma Talmadge's latest dramatic picture hit, Smiling Through, based on the Broadway hit of two seasons ago? Mary Pickford has, and she liked it. It deals with a subject which interests most women, she says, that of spiritualism, which is so delicately and beautifully handled that it could offend no one. Miss Talmadge plays both the young heroine and her deceased aunt, and Harrison Ford plays both the man who loves the niece and the man who loved the dead aunt. As Miss Pickford says, spiritualism is of interest to women and also big box office. Nine men set off from Pensacola, Florida, on the fishing schooner, the Caldwell H. Colt. The boat was caught in a gale and wrecked on a reef near the Tortugas Light off the coast of Texas. Five men died immediately. Four survived another week as their supplies dwindled. They were sighted by the liner El Oriente, but one of the four slipped into the water and drowned as the ship was approaching. And of the remaining three taken aboard El Oriente, one died shortly after rescue. Your world news update. The messy aftermath of the Great War appears to be settling down. The Permanent Court of International Justice has officially begun operating in The Hague, and the US Department of War has announced that more than half of the remaining 6,000 American troops in Germany will be withdrawn. Latvia has its first constitution adopted by its Constitutional Assembly, and Lithuania has begun its program of land reform, under which over a million acres will be nationalized and then redistributed. In India, the Prince of Wales has received an enthusiastic welcome upon his arrival in Delhi. Chittaranjan Das, president-elect of the Indian National Congress, was not there to meet him. At one point, Mr. Das would have been just the person to present to His Royal Highness. He maintained a personal laundry in Paris to clean and repair his handmade London suits. But he gave all that up when he joined the non-cooperation movement and began wearing the khadi cloth favoured by Mr. Gandhi. Mr. Das was arrested in December on charges of being manager of an unlawful association and has now been sentenced to 6 months' imprisonment. Ali Muslihah will also not be meeting the prince. The imam of Tirurangadi Masjid led the uprising at Malabar, which was finally put down last month. He has been hanged at Coimbatore Prison.
How you gonna keep him down on the farm after they've seen Paris? How you gonna keep him away from Broadway, jumping around and painting the town? How you gonna keep him away from harm? That's a mystery. They'll never want to see a rake or plow? And who the deuce can poly loo a cow? How you gonna keep them down on the farm after they've seen Harry?
How are you going to keep them down on the farm? Well, maybe through agricultural cooperatives in which farmers pool their resources in certain areas. In the United States, President Harding has signed into law the Cooperative Marketing Associations Act, which permits farmers' cooperatives to be formed and exempts them from antitrust laws. Kennesaw Mountain Landis is both a federal judge and America's first commissioner of baseball. The American Bar Association and a lot of other people do not think federal judges should be moonlighting in other employment and have been trying without success to have Congress legislate against it. Mr. Landis has now chosen the ball game over the bench and quit his judgeship, protesting that, quote, there are not enough hours in the day. The U.S. Bureau of Prohibition now has a fleet of 11 airplanes painted in battleship grey to clamp down on the importation of illegal liquor by sea. Its first catch was the British schooner Annabelle. The federal plane swooped and, armed with machine guns, their men seized the vessel and its 21-strong crew and forced the boat ashore in Florida. The American airship Roma departed Langley Field for a test flight of its new Liberty L-12 engines and was approaching Hampton Roads Naval Base when it began tilting forward and then descended rapidly. It struck electrical wires and its hydrogen gas burst into flames. 34 people are dead, all but five of them officers or enlisted men of the U.S. Army's Air Service.
Everybody loves a baby, that's why I'm in love with you. Pretty baby, pretty baby. And I'd like to be your sister, brother, dad, and mother too. Pretty baby, pretty baby.
Not everybody loves a baby, but the government of Japan does. Margaret Sanger, the advocate of so-called birth control, was due to sail from San Francisco on the steamer Tayo Maru to begin a lecture tour of the country. But the Japanese government has now banned her from entry into that nation. A new series by Edgar Rice Burroughs has begun in Argosy All Story Weekly. It is set on Mars and is called The Chessmen of Mars because the ingenious Mr. Burroughs has invented a board game that is a Martian version of chess with 100 squares and 20 pieces. Fans of the author are now demanding to know the full rules so they can play Martian chess at home. If you've ever seen Ed Wynn in his perfect fool character on Broadway, you'll know that it's one of the funniest nights out to be had anywhere. So you can understand why New York's WJZ, when it decided it would be the first radio station to broadcast a live comedy show, felt Mr. Wynn would be the perfect choice. Alas, it was no laughing matter. The perfect fool found himself thrown off his timing by having to deliver his routine into a microphone without benefit of an audience. And surefire gags such as his uncle naming his automobile Baby because it won't go anywhere without a rattle fell very flat. Arkansas has its first radio station, WOK, in Pine Bluff, as does Iowa, WOC, in Davenport. Seven theaters in Washington, D.C. have been closed following safety inspections in the wake of the Knickerbocker Theater disaster.
Daddy! best friend I had. Daddy, you've been a mother to me.
Many Parisian artists would rather sing Dada, You've Been a Mother to Me. But now, the avant-garde Dada art movement is deeply divided following the author André Breton's attack on the performance artist Tristan Tzara as a mere publicity-mongering imposter. Now, a mock trial of Monsieur Breton has been held in a Paris café with the composer Eric Satie serving as judge and over 100 other avant-garde artists in attendance from Pablo Picasso to Jean Cocteau. Monsieur Breton appeared shaken by the viciousness of the charges levelled against him, and there is talk that the trial may even mark the end of Dadaism. In sports news, Czechoslovakia has defeated Sweden 3-2 to win the European Ice Hockey Championship. The boxing promoter Tex Ricard, who runs Madison Square Garden, has been arrested on charges of abducting and sexually assaulting 4 underage girls. Oh, when you and I were young, Maggie. Do you remember reading that book, How to Live a Century and Grow Old Gracefully? It was written by Dr. James Martin Peebles, the anti-vaccination physician, spiritualist, vegetarian, and chairman of Peebles Institute of Health in Battle Creek, Michigan, manufacturers of Dr. Peebles' epilepsy remedy. The book about How to Live a Century was a bestseller in 1884 when Dr. Peebles was 62 and determined to live up to its title. Alas, he has fallen a few weeks short. Dr. Peebles is dead just 36 days before reaching his centennial. Friends say they plan to go ahead with what will now be a, quote, post-mortem 100th birthday party, at which they expect him to deliver a message from the other side. Richard Beddoes was an Englishman from Liverpool who fought for the Union side in the American Civil War and was awarded the Medal of Honor for his actions at the Battle of Spotsylvania Courthouse in 1864. He is dead at 78. Newton Knight started the war on the other side from Mr. Beddoes, but in Mississippi he rebelled against the Confederacy and led a group of Confederate deserters into seceding from the secessionists and proclaiming Jones County, Mississippi, the free state of Jones and part of the United States. Mr. Knight is dead at 92. Texas John Slaughter was a Western lawman who tracked the Apache chief Geronimo and brought in the notorious Taylor Gang. He played poker and didn't like to be cheated out of his winnings. The cattle rustler Brian Gallagher tried it, and Texas John tracked him all the way from San Antonio to New Mexico and shot him down. John Slaughter is dead at 80. Dr. Albert Shelton was the first Christian missionary to receive permission from the Dalai Lama to enter Tibet, and he established a thriving mission at Batang. However, he wished to penetrate deeper into the mountain kingdom. Instead, en route to Markham Ghatok, he was ambushed by brigands and shot the following day. Dr. Shelton is dead at 46. Your world news update. In turbulent times, is there anything more cheering than a royal wedding? Princess Mary won all our hearts with her tireless charity work through the war and after. Just last year, the King and Queen's only daughter became the first patron of the Not Forgotten Association for ex-servicemen and hosted a grand Christmas tea party for 600 of them at St. James's Palace. They are now among the many celebrating Her Royal Highness's marriage at Westminster Abbey to Viscount Lascelles, DSO, a major major in the Grenadier Guards and heir to the Earldom of Harwood. The wedding dress reflected many aspects of the empire, from the oh-so-English trellis work of roses in pearls and crystal beads to the lotus-flowered motifs embroidered in India. Lady Elizabeth Bowes Lyon, a friend of Princess Mary and fiancée to her brother Prince Albert, was among the bride's attendants as they left the abbey, and cheers accompanied the wedding party through the streets to the traditional balcony appearance at Buckingham Palace. The messy aftermath of the Great War appears to be settling down after 2 days of meetings in Boulogne. British Prime Minister Lloyd George and French Premier Raymond Poincaré have agreed a 20-year military alliance between their respective nations. As the New York Times reports, quote, "If it means anything, it must mean an end of the tiresome quarrels between England and France, which have cursed Europe since November the 11th, 1918. Besides agreeing to go to war if Germany should make an unprovoked attack against either nation, the new pact also means, quote, that England and France promise to protect Poland against attack by Germany, a considerable victory gained by France for her Polish protege. The new agreement will be signed in London just ahead of the April Economic Conference in Genoa. In Moscow, Vladimir Lenin has signed into law the All-Russian Central Executive Committee's decree on removal of church valuables for the relief of the starving. Under the decree, the Bolsheviks will pay for famine relief through the confiscation of religious icons containing jewellery, gold, silver, or other precious minerals that can be processed or resold. Beginning on March the 26th, police agencies will take, quote, the riches of churches of all denominations in gold, silver, and jewels, whose requisition cannot really injure the interests of the cult itself, and hand them over to the official financial bodies for the benefit of the famine. The Patriarch of Moscow has filed a legal appeal to delay the enforcement of the decree. Unilaterally ended its protectorate over Egypt and declared de jure Egyptian sovereignty, while reserving British authority over Egypt's foreign and military affairs. The announcement states that martial law enforced by the British Army will continue until the Egyptian government passes an act of indemnity to protect British interests, and that Britain will reserve its discretion in matters involving the security of British Empire communications, the defence of Egypt against all foreign aggression and interference, the protection of minorities and of foreign interests in Egypt, and protection of British interests in the Sudan. Sultan Fuad, who has generally cooperated with British authorities since ascending the throne in 1917, is reported to be considering marking the end of the protectorate by promoting himself to king. On John Bull's other island, where the Irish Free State will soon be inaugurated, the pro-Free State and anti-Free State factions of the revolutionary Republicans Sinn Féin have signed a truce regarding cooperation with the provisional government and have agreed to revisit the issue of ratification in 3 months' time. In the United States, the Secretary of the Navy, Theodore Roosevelt Jr., has designated the California City, that will serve as the Pacific Fleet's destroyer base. It will be San Diego, a quiet Southern California municipality of some 100,000 people. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce has announced its creation of a national airline for regularly scheduled passenger flights. The General Air Service Corporation will use dirigibles to connect America's major cities. The U.S. Supreme Court has unanimously rejected two challenges to the 19th Amendment to the Constitution, extending the right to vote to women. The court held that a general citizen has no standing to maintain a cause of action against the amendment. It's different in Japan. Parliament, the Diet, has rejected a proposal for universal suffrage with 288 votes against and only 159 in favour of extending voting rights to women. General José María Orellana overthrew the government of Guatemala in a coup d'état in December. He then scheduled a vote to ratify his coup, putting up his fellow coup leader, General Jorge Ubico, as a token alternative on the ballot. General Orellana has now won the so-called election with 95% of the vote to General Ubico's 5. Bamberger's department store in Newark, New Jersey, has a lot of radio receivers to sell, and to promote sales has launched its own radio station, WOR, broadcasting from the roof of the store across the river into New York City. Its announcer welcomed listeners by using a self-made microphone consisting of a megaphone attached to a telephone mouthpiece. He then introduced the station's first ever phonograph record, Al Jolson singing his sensational new song, April Showers.
Life is not a highway strewn with flowers. Still it holds a goodly share of bliss. When the sun gives way to April showers, here's a thought we should never miss. Though April showers may come your way, they bring the flowers that bloom in May. And if it's raining, have no regret, because it isn't raining a rain, you know, it's raining violet. And where you see clouds on the hill, you soon will see crowds of daffodils. So keep on looking for a bluebird and listening for its song. Whenever April showers come
Speaking of radio, the very first national radio conference has been opened in Washington by the Commerce Secretary, Herbert Hoover. The Viscount Harcourt, who served as Britain's Secretary of State for the Colonies from 1910 to 1915, has been found dead in his bed from what is believed to be an accidental overdose of the sleeping powder bromidia. There are, however, other rumours circulating, Lulu Harcourt, as he was known to one and all, being a man of very wide acquaintance. Port Harcourt in Nigeria is named for him. Lord Harcourt was 59 and his 13-year-old son inherits the viscountcy. Henri Désiré Landru was the so-called Bluebeard of Gambé, a small village in the Île-de-France region of north-central France. He was convicted last year of murdering 10 women and one man, seven of those women being villagers of Gambé. But we will never know for certain how many he killed. During the late war, he is known to have corresponded with 283 French women. 72 of them cannot be found. Landru has been executed by guillotine at the Saint-Pierre prison in Versailles. He was 52. Camille Saint-Saëns composed this piece of music, and if you're thinking, well, I'm a huge admirer of Monsieur Saint-Saëns, I've never heard that before. Well, he wrote it in 1886 and then started worrying that it could ruin his reputation. So he put it away, and it was never heard. Now, 36 years later, and 2 months after the composer's death, it has been given its first public performance in Paris by the Concert Colonne Orchestra under Gabriel Pierné. The piece was very well received, both by audience and critics, and it seems as if we will be hearing much more of it in the years ahead. It is called The Carnival of the Animals. Joseph Jolly Kyle was born in Stirling, Scotland, but emigrated to the Argentine, where he became a pioneering chemist and a pharmacist lieutenant with the Army Medical Corps during the War of the Triple Alliance. He found himself fighting in the bloodiest international engagement ever fought in South America, the Battle of Tuyuti, which cost almost 7,000 lives. He survived that terrible conflict by over half a century and is dead at 84. Samuel A. Derrier seems set for a splendid career as a short story writer. In 1919, he won the prestigious O. Henry Memorial Award in its first year for his story The Trial in Tom Belcher's Store. And he won a second O. Henry Award just last year, but he is dead of a ruptured appendix at the age of 41. Ella O'Neill was the widow of the famous actor James O'Neill and mother of the young new playwright Eugene O'Neill, whose first full-length work to be produced, Beyond the Horizon, won the Pulitzer Prize in 1920, and whose new play, Anna Christie, is currently playing to sell-out houses at the Vanderbilt on Broadway. Despite her celebrated husband and son, Mrs. O'Neill did not have a happy life. Shortly after her marriage, a woman of low repute sued James O'Neill, claiming that he was the father of her son. And the birth of Mrs. O'Neill's son Eugene required morphine, which became a lifelong addiction. Ella O'Neill is dead at 64. And that's the way of the world, February 1922.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
The 100 Years Ago Show is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and O'Kill Media. All rights reserved.